Hello and welcome back to the Third Period Podcast, where we take a look at the UK's ice hockey leagues. We're sponsored by Willie's Ice Hockey Emporium for all your ice hockey needs. Check them out. Hello everyone and welcome back to a new episode of the Third Period Podcast. I hope everybody's been doing well and keeping good over the last few weeks. Hope you all enjoyed the Elite Series that we had on from the league. So with me today we have our usual panel, which is Ash. Ash, how have you been?
Very good, thank you, Danny.
Fantastic. And we have Ross there as well. Ross, how you been?
Yeah, all fine, thanks, Danny.
Fantastic. And then lastly, we've got Scott in there as well, who's been doing a lot of microphone talking for the Blaze over the last few weeks. How you been, Scott?
Not too bad, mate. Enjoyed the Elite Series. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Good to have had some hockey. So hopefully now countdown to August, September time, we can crack on like it's normal. So tonight's guest played for the Calgary Hitmen in the WHL, had a spell with the Springfield Falcons in the AHL, the Johnstown Chiefs in the ECHL, before returning back to the AHL in 2006 with the Falcons again. Went and spent two seasons abroad in Sweden, had one season in Denmark, which was sandwiched in the middle of their return to Canada, and then ventured into the UK scene by joining the Coventry Blaze and leaving and retiring on a high, becoming a playoff winner. We welcome Mike Egner. Mike, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
So, Mike, you spent the first 4 years of your career in the WHL playing for the Calgary Hitmen. Tell us more about your time there and what it was like.
Yeah, for me being in the Western League, you know, it was nice. I got to obviously play in the Western League as a 16-year-old, you know, and got to live at home. My family lived in Calgary, so that was quite nice, having my family be able to come down and watch me play there in Calgary. We got to play down at the Saddle Dome, so in the big rink there, we got some decent fans and whatnot. But you know, growing up in Canada, major junior for me was the route I really wanted to go, obviously, before going and playing, you know, hopefully in the NHL, which was obviously my dream. But getting an opportunity to play for the hometown team in Calgary was a lot of fun and just enjoyable to have family members be able to come down each night and watch, you know. And we always had a good number of scouts coming by to be able to watch our games too, with being in a big city like we were in Calgary. Growing up, I my dad was actually in the military, so we kind of moved every 3-4 years in Canada. We spent a lot of time in Eastern Canada before making our way out to Calgary when I personally was about 14, 15 years old. So getting on with the Hitmen, I wasn't drafted with them. It was kind of an invite. I was invited into their camp, got an opportunity to go. And from there, you know, kind of just earned my way on to the team and as a 16-year-old, and then yeah, played there for 4 years before turning pro.
And I also noticed that when you were at Calgary Hitmen, you wrapped up the penalty minutes. Was that just the style of the play that you played, or what was it that made you have high penalty minutes?
Yeah, I think I that was definitely kind of what made me unique as a player. I like to play physical. I, especially as a young guy, didn't back down, you know, from guys and whatnot. And I felt like, you know, for me to be given an opportunity to play at that level, I wasn't the most skilled, I would say. But I was a guy that was willing to work really hard and I think, you know, stick up for my teammates when the time came, or try my best to you know, get the boys going any way I could. And that's where I found kind of success and probably one of the first to admit, you know, as I got going in my career, kind of it uh, it was part, I would say, bigger part of my game than I maybe wished it to be. Looking back at my career, but it certainly allowed me to play minutes and, you know, make an impact on a team. And I think too, it allowed me to kind of feel valued as well with my teammates. So yeah, it was my 16-year-old year. I think I had like 90 PIMs, somewhere around that. You know, whenever I got into games, which as a 16-year-old, you know, was, I think I played around like 50 games. So I wasn't playing regular minutes. So definitely was finding any way I could to get in the lineup with the physical stuff. And then it kind of just, you know, you feel valued that way, and you begin kind of getting a reputation for playing that way. And it kind of just escalated from there, I guess.
Yeah. And then in 2003, you played in the CHL Top Prospect game. How was that for yourself?
Yeah, that was really cool. You know, we were the two coaches that were in that prospects game were Don Cherry and Bobby Orr. So that was just, that alone was super cool. You know, being, I think, yeah, my coach was Cherry. So I've got a really neat picture, you know, of the team photo with obviously Cherry and you know, all the guys that were on that team. Like, that draft year was a pretty stacked class. You know, the team that I was on, we had Phaneuf, Marc-Andre Fleury, Nathan Horton, Getz, Ryan Getzlaff. So there were some really big names. I mean, you go through it and it's crazy to see the guys. That draft class was pretty solid. But yeah, you know, again, playing junior in Canada, and you know, the top prospects game is kind of like an all-star game. The stands are, the crowds into the game, you know, full barn and whatnot. It was in Kitchener that year. Again, lots of scouts. Obviously, you know, that's part of what you're thinking about that draft year, especially, you know, is, you know, play your game and you hope to get noticed and whatnot. But we had, there was a competition, you know, that for the hardest shot, skating, all that stuff. So it was fun being a part of that whole thing too. And just an overall really good experience being part of that.
After the experience and being coached by Don Cherry and playing against a lot of NHL alumni, you were drafted quite high, second round.
Yeah.
Then, as Danny's alluded to, you spent a lot of time in the American leagues and the coast. And again, the penalty minutes followed you during them times. But if you, from my opinion back then, hockey was a different game. The fighting was a lot more, well, it wasn't like nowadays where it's frowned upon quite a lot, and tough stay-at-home D-men were a big part of the game. During them times in the AHL and the East Coast, did you ever think you'd make the step up to the NHL?
For sure. You know, I my first year, I had a pretty solid year. That was during the lockout. The first lockout of 04. And, you know, so I had a really good season that year. You know, my second year was a little bit tough, got off to a tough start, you know, coming out of camp, to be honest. So that was a little bit tough. But, you know, my third year, my coach at the time said that, had told me, you know, there's a good chance that you potentially get a call up here if things, you know, if there's an injury or whatnot with the big club. Just unfortunately, it just didn't happen. You know, it was, you're that close, but there's a lot of different factors that come into play, and, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out. And unfortunately, yeah, just didn't materialize. I probably, you know, at times didn't do myself a favor either. You know, like I said, kind of got away from my game and was focusing on other things like the fighting instead of just kind of focusing on being a steady defensive D-man that was reliable. And here and there, kind of got into, mixed it up. But, you know, I think for me, I kind of started thinking I was a different player than what I actually was. And that kind of may have hurt me a little bit, I think, but just real honest opinion. But you're right. You know, it was looking back at that time, you know, that's 15 years ago. Fighting was a big part of the game. And now, you know, the game's changed so much and it's gone in a better direction, in my opinion. You know, I remember going, getting in ready for games, and every game, you know, the team would have like a stack pack, like a stat pack that they give to you. And, you know, you'd look through it and you'd see like Hartford Wolfpack and the Providence Bruins. Like you look back at their teams they had back in 04, 05, 06, like they were just stacked with heavyweights. And, you know, you'd go through the stat pack and you'd see Steve McIntyre, you know, or Trevor Gillies, Colton Orr, you know, like these guys are out of your class, out of my class, right? But you'd go in there looking at that and seeing 6'6", 240, whatever, you know, putting up pretty good PIMs, and that's their livelihood, right? And guys that actually enjoy getting smacked in the face with a fist. Me, not so much, you know, I just wasn't one of those guys that could kind of take them like they could. But yeah, you know, you before a game, that would bring up your anxiety and just cause a lot of stress. And I think with the kids these days, you know, they don't have to do that. They don't have to look at the stat pack and see all, you know, the guys, a lineup full of those sort of guys. They can look at it and see a lineup full of guys with lots of points and super, you know, really skilled players and stuff. And I think that's exciting about the game and exciting for the young guys coming up. They don't have to worry about that stuff, right? They can just go out and play and, you know, but I do think that the fighting, it should stay part of the game. It's what makes the game unique. And, you know, but more not the stage fighting, right? The stuff that happens as it's going on, as the game's going on, because it's what makes the game unique.
During the time while you were in the American leagues on the coast in 07-08, you didn't partake in many games. Was the reason for that, or injuries, or?
Yeah, that was you know, another thing that kind of with my style of play, with like the physicality and whatnot. You know, I kind of felt like I played the game hard every game. You know, I try not to take a night off. So that, unfortunately, kind of what came with that, playing that physical style and competitive style, you know, unfortunately, I had a number of injuries. You know, I had some concussions that I had. And that particular year, I think I bummed up my shoulder. I broke a rib, you know, so that the shoulder alone, I was out for a month or two, and the ribs, I was out longer than I kind of thought. And I think I even had a groin injury that year. What was happening with Tampa Bay that season is they were transitioning me to, I was playing forward actually. And, it was going really well. For me as a forward, I was playing a lot. I was playing some good minutes and being really effective and whatnot, but my body just wasn't used to, you know, chipping the puck in and torpedoing guys and running around that way, you know, skating much more than you were when you're skating backwards as a defenseman. So it was some adjustment there, but that's why that season I played so few games.
Why the move to Sweden come about? I mean, at 24, you're trying to jump up and then you end up in Sweden. You play for two teams in Sweden, Vita Hassan and Björklöven, not played many games. So what was that year like for you?
Yeah, that was another trying, interesting year for me too. That year I actually had signed, in the summertime, I had signed with Boston. I signed a two-way with the Bruins, and I signed a two-way NHL American League deal. So I went to training camp, and I had a good camp, but I came back down, and I needed a break from the game. I was going through a tougher time, and people would probably think I'm foolish doing this, but I went in. I just said I can't be playing with this sort of mindset, and I had my contract canceled, nullified, and I came back home and was kind of you know, trying to figure out what it is I wanted to do. And long story, just short, you know, I decided obviously to get back into hockey around Christmas time it was. And that's why I went over to Sweden to try something different. You know, I and was able to get into Div 1 to start. And then I was able to get into the Allsvenskan. And that's kind of ended up being over there and trying something different. And you know, that season over there was a good year for me, even though it was really short. It was a good experience to play some different hockey and high-paced hockey. I kind of wanted to, part of me was to kind of get away from the physicality. The American League, when you're playing that way, it's a tough grind, right? But came back over the year after and played in Ontario and the coast and had a really good year. And I put up some decent numbers there as a defenseman, but I think a lot of that was just kind of going over and playing the European style game and bring some of that back with me to the ECHL.
Well, I mean, fair play to you for actually saying this isn't working out. I mean, I think it's more acceptable these days, but I mean, 2004 was a good few years ago. It probably wasn't expected someone to do that. So you went to Sweden, you learned a few things, because what I noticed, you went back to Ontario Reign and you did put up some good points. So was it the Sweden experience that gave you that to put the points up?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like I said, just like the speed of the game, you know, like even Div 1. So Div 1 is the third league in Sweden. And they obviously have the format they have is like even a third league team could work their way all the way up to the Allsvenskan and then work their way up further from there to the Elitserien. So the hockey was really good in that league. You know, I was quite surprised. Very competitive players. I remember in practice, like guys going full out and, you know, body contact, being hard on one another in practice. And that was surprising because in North America, you know, you compete in practice, but you're not full out hitting guys, you know, to try and like, you know, hurt them. Like, I just felt like there they were just, that's just the way they practiced, right? They were just practice like you play, and they like really practice that way. They were extremely physical in practice, and yeah, the pace was fast, highly skilled players. I think some of that kind of you know, helped with me the next year. And I think it kind of maybe revitalized something in me too with playing the game, you know. Like I said, signing that contract with Boston and then you know, moving on from that and kind of needing a break. You know, there's so much that was happening with me from like 17, 18 years old up until I was that age. You know, when I got that contract, you get drafted, there's a lot of pressure on you. Obviously, I didn't, you know, I was the top pick that year I was drafted, and, you know, I didn't play in the NHL. So I took that hard, you know. And of course, now being older, would you do things differently? You know, now that you're away from the game, absolutely. But at the time, it was tough, and I needed a bit of a break. And going over to Sweden and doing that, and then coming back to play with the Reign, you know, I had a really fun year there. We really enjoyed playing in California there. It was a good season, a great team, you know, well coached. Carl Taylor was the head coach. He's now head coach with Milwaukee in the American Hockey League. And our assistant coach is Greg Poss, who's a head coach, and I think in Austria, Germany, over in Europe. So we had really good coaching and, yeah, a really good group of guys too, really good teammates.
Was there an option for you to stay back in Europe, or was it your decision, right, revitalize, I'm going to go back America?
That particular year there wasn't an opportunity to go back with those two teams that I had played with. you know, and like I said, I kind of revitalized a little bit in me, and I wanted to come back and give it a shot again, you know, like, you know, with the contract with Boston, obviously teams are not going to give me an opportunity to play in the American League right away. So I thought, you know, I would go back and try it out again in the ECHL and see where it took me. Obviously wasn't able to make my way back up to the American League again, unfortunately, but, you know, eventually made my way back over to Europe, obviously, but yeah.
Talking of the times you had in Ontario, you played with John Rout, who was in Nottingham last year, and we got the season cancelled, Jeff Walker, Adam Henrik. Then you went to Florida Everblades, and it's like an Elite League alumni. You had Matthew Waugh, who was the king of Sheffield, as they call him, Becker, Pitt, Philip Paquette, Tim Spencer, who was fantastic in Sheffield. What was that year like in Florida? Because you were also the captain.
Yeah, it was, just like you said, you know, some really good skilled players, really good guys too, good teammates. I went to Florida, so our assistant coach there, Greg Poss, got the head coaching job with Florida. I thought being over in the eastern part of the United States was going to maybe give me a better opportunity to get back up with the American League again. Just because, yeah, in Ontario, you know, you were in the western part of the states, like the ECHL had a division over there at the time. So I thought coming back out east would maybe give me a better shot of getting back up to the American League again. And yeah, all those guys, really good teammates. Matthew Waugh at that time, you know, you could see he was just one of those guys willing to go to the front of the net, you know, and take a beating in front and get rewarded for it. Paquette, Phil and I actually played together on that team. He eventually did get traded out west to Bakersfield, I think it was, but same thing, you know, a competitive guy, could really skate well. And then Tim Spencer, he's a guy that you wouldn't really want to mess with, right? Big guy, good teammate, always there for guys, always sticking up for teammates. Loved the way he played, and obviously a good western Canadian guy. But yeah, if Florida was, it was a good spot as well. My season was hampered there. You know, I had a bad concussion that year. So my season was shortened there, but, it was a good experience playing there. And again, good coaching with Greg, Brad Tapper was our assistant coach there, longtime, professional player, and was kind of just starting getting into coaching and whatnot. But yeah, it was a solid place. The year after, they end up winning the Kelly Cup, you know, with a lot of those same guys and whatnot. So it was good to see them have some success.
I mean, I visited there on holiday, but is it a joy to play in that sort of area?
Yeah. You know, I think with hockey, like when you get to that point where you're still obviously trying to, you know, I was, like I said, I moved out there because I wanted to get back to the American League, and still relatively young where maybe you can make something happen from it. But at the same time, if, you know, you also want to be happy to, you know, with your life away from home or away from the rink. And, you know, I think for me, like I always looked at it, like hockey's an opportunity for you to get out and meet people, obviously, and see different cultures and be able to, yeah, travel and get unique experiences with life. And, you know, with hockey, we're afforded that. And, you know, Florida was just another one of those spots that we were fortunate enough to go down and play, but it was different because it was so warm out all the time. Like you could obviously hit up the beach and in your shorts and the same day be going in the rink. So there's a definite, mentally getting into things, you know, but it's like anything, we're all trained and you create those habits. Once the puck drops, you know, you're ready to go.
So in 2011, you moved to Denmark and went back to Europe. Was that because of the concussion that you got in Florida? You thought you'd go back to the European style of play?
Yeah, I think, you know, after that season, it was kind of clear I wasn't going to be getting opportunity back in the American League, you know, and be able to maybe work my way back up. And you got to kind of have a short shelf life, right, of being able to potentially do that. So for me, I wasn't going to just toil away, you know, in the ECHL and do that. I thought it was, you know, an opportunity to go over and experience some different hockey and travel a bit and meet new people and whatnot. And I was fortunate enough to get an opportunity to go over to Esbjerg in Denmark. And, you know, it was, again, an eye-opener, you know, like you go over and you see the level of hockey. Like there's some really good Danish hockey players, very, very highly skilled, fast. All of them can skate. You know, they don't really like the, they play, they compete very hard, but the physicality, that stuff, they didn't really like. So it was kind of tough for me to, I continued to play physical and whatnot. And I think, you know, was kind of targeted lots by the officials over there. Like I said, anytime I would kind of hit somebody, it seemed like I was going in the box, but yeah.
Well, funny you should say that, you know, 235 penalty minutes. Yeah. That was pretty good going, that was, that's for sure. I mean, European, they don't like physical play really. So no. As soon as I saw 35 penalty minutes, I thought, wow,
yeah,
that must have been your physical day.
And I think I might have racked up some like tens over there too, which they count. I'm pretty sure. So that probably padded my PIMS and whatnot. But yeah, it was, you know, I probably, yeah, again, I probably should have maybe just toned her down a bit. But it was, I wanted to play hard over there. And you know, seemed to kind of get targeted at times, but it is what it was. Yeah, it was still a really good experience. You know, Danish people, awesome people, again, really good teammates, awesome coaches, great staff. You know, and there was an opportunity to go back there after that year, but we were just kind of at that stage. We hadn't had any kids yet. And, you know, we wanted to, yeah, experience something different. Now with, you know, having young children, it'd be a great place to be able to kind of settle down in and play some hockey and whatnot. But yeah, it was a good experience.
Well, I just want to let you know that I did a bit of research today and you're in the top three in the whole entire Danish league to get 235 penalty minutes.
Yes.
So you're in the top three. You're third.
Yeah. Who's first?
Luke Sellers was 246 penalty minutes.
Yeah.
And then Dale Mitchell, he was 236. So he was only one ahead of you.
Oh my gosh.
So I should have
maybe been a bit sillier to be able to take the spot. The one record I do have in the Western League with the Hitmen is an all-time penalty minute leader. I don't know. Yeah. And that will be the only stat I will ever be able to hold my name to.
Well, it's always good to hold your name to something, isn't it?
And that's without counting tens. They never counted tens there. And, you know, I racked up my fair share of 10, so it would have probably been a lot higher than that.
It's been a tough time for hockey players of all ages and levels, but now is the time to get back at it. And there's no better place for all your hockey needs than Willie's Ice Hockey Emporium in Earlsdon, Coventry. From general consumables to gear for all levels and ages, from top brands, grab your gear either at their website, williesicehockeyemporium.co.uk, or in store, where Johnny, Luke and the team are on hand to help with all your hockey needs.
So you leave Denmark and you end up in Coventry. So how did that move come about?
Yeah, so I The agent that I was using in Denmark, he had a connection. I'm pretty sure it was with Paul Thompson. You know, Tomo was looking for, I think, obviously a Canadian rear guard, you know, a guy that was going to kind of fit his need, I think, for on the back end. And it kind of came together pretty quickly. And I thought for me, you know, it was going to be a good fit with my style of play, with the number of imports that were in England. And, you know, my wife, her mother's side of the family was from up around the Newcastle area. So there was some history there and whatnot. And, you know, we wanted to try some different. And yeah, so we came over and, you know, it was a real fun season, you know, and that's, you know, kind of exactly what I was looking for, you know, with hockey, kind of knowing that I was kind of heading towards the end of my career, wanted to just kind of be highly competitive still, but have some fun and, you know, and be in a town where, you know, the fans appreciated your style of play and, you know, have a coach that really enjoyed, you know, the way that you came every day and gave your best and, you know, and then obviously teammates, you know, everyone there being English speaking, made it really easy. And, the Brits, all great guys that we had on our team. And then all of the imports that we had were all really good, guys too. And I actually played with Shea Guthrie. So Shea and I played together in Florida. We first got to know one another there. And I think maybe he might've potentially helped out too. I'm sure Tomo would probably end up inquiring, you know, asking him about a former teammate or whatever. But yeah, so really fun first year, and then obviously end up staying for three seasons.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that because you're not going to know who Coventry are. When you get approached to sign for the Blaze, what sort of homework do you do, and who do you speak to before you sign the contract?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Tomo sent an email or kind of had put something together, kind of show, you know, what there is to do in the area and stuff. And we naturally just kind of look into it as well, you know, go do a quick Google search, internet search, and, you know, see what the area is like. And then any players that have played there or, you know, you look to the players that are playing in the league as well to see what kind of competition there is and that sort of thing. So, you know, again, for me, I wanted to go over to Europe, and, you know, the England was, it just kind of fit the bill in terms of what I was going to bring, you know, for as a player. I quickly found out, you know, in Denmark that they, you know, like that sort of player there is not as coveted as it is in England.
That year, Nottingham sweeped the league, which is unusual for them. Blades, we had a good team. We had the Lee brothers, Ben Olsen, yourself, Dustin Cameron, who was a player.
Yeah.
We had an indifferent season, probably a 500 season. What would you have changed in that season?
That was the lockout year. Was it lockout year? Or with...
Matt Bolesky came, yeah.
Yeah. That season with... obviously Nottingham, my goodness, you know, did they even lose 10 games? they were highly competitive, obviously. You know, I really enjoyed my teammates. We had a great team. I felt like we were there for one another every night. And you don't always have that. Like, you don't always have, I think that's a really important part of a successful team is to try and, you know, every game you want to have your teammates' backs. And that doesn't necessarily mean fighting. It means sticking up for one another, maybe in scrums by just getting in front of, you know, the face of another teammate or opponent. you know, being encouraging, not having selfish players, no egos. Like we had all that. We had, you know, we had guys, yeah, no egos. We had selfless hockey players, guys that were willing to do whatever it took for the team. And, you know, when we came time to the playoffs, we knocked out Sheffield. And that was great, right? We beat them in overtime, I think it was. Shea scored.
Shea Guthrie, not Sheffield, yeah.
Yeah, and then we were playing in that other rink, right, in Sheffield. And that was awesome. We had such a fun time. And I could just feel the excitement, you know, of guys like, well, of Tomo, right? Tomo and Matty Soderstrom, right? And all the guys that had been around a long time that, you know, had been there when they had won championships and league titles and whatnot. And I think they could kind of feel that we had something special. Obviously, when we went to the Final Four there in Nottingham, it didn't end up, you know, going the way we kind of wanted. But I do think there was hallmarks of kind of having some really good pieces in there. And, you know, like we had the Lead brothers, like you mentioned, they were at the end of their career and we saw them show up every day, very professional, giving their absolute best while they're managing their school studies. You know, we had obviously Russ being there, being a wily old vet with the Brits. And Ross Venus was, I think he was maybe only a couple years in.
Yeah.
But yeah, to be honest, for me, it was a fun year. And obviously we would love to have won some silverware. It didn't end up being that way, but I think it was an overall positive year as a player.
And from the conversations we had earlier about sometimes you get involved in penalty minutes, had a big run in with Guy Lapine that year. Did you enjoy getting into that rivalry? And would you speak to him after the game? And how does it all work?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, I never actually spoke with Lapine after the game, just because where they were, you know, when they leave. But, it, you know, I think it's like any typical hockey player. Like, you don't really have a, you know, it's almost kind of seems to me like with the rugby players, you know, they grab a beer afterwards and they talk about the, you know, the game a bit or whatever. They have a lot of respect. And I think that's the same with hockey players, you know, like the guys you go against, you battle against, you know, they might be your teammates one day. Who knows? But I think hockey players are kind of, yeah, we don't necessarily hold grudges against one another. Lapine, you know, that year it was a good rivalry. It was kind of just natural. It was just, you know, the few times that we kind of locked in there together, or a couple times or whatever it was, it was just kind of as the game was going on, right? And natural play or natural engagement between the two of us. You know, he wasn't a dirty player. He was a very honorable guy and got respect for those sort of guys.
Yeah, I mean, it was the time where the Blaze and Panthers were proper going at each other. It was a good rivalry. I mean, the Sky Dome was electric on those sort of nights.
Yeah, they were fun. They were certainly fun to play, and they give you know, they had a good turnout too, right? With bringing their fans in there, that, like you said, it made it really lively and it was fun to be a part of that. You notice it in a rink like Coventry, you know, where it's kind of smaller, you know, and you can really sense the atmosphere, the excitement in the air and whatnot, and it just kind of adds to it. It makes it fun to be a part of as a player.
Definitely was. And then we sign you back, Mike, and then you have an illness, the Guillain-Barré syndrome. Can you talk to us about how you found out what was going on with your body and what happened?
That was a crazy time. you know, my daughter, she was born that year, right? So she was really young. You know, that summer, our place in Calgary, we had a condo there. We had flooding in Calgary with the river nearby. So where we lived, you know, we had to move out and our place got flooded and whatnot. And they haven't targeted, you know, this is how you got it. But I'm pretty positive. We removed a lot of the drywall and whatnot. And I imagine like bacteria somehow in the walls or in the water got into my system somehow. And it was almost like a month after, you know, exactly to the day after the flood happened, where I was lying in bed at night and I could remember it just all of a sudden feeling tingliness in my toes. And, you know, it was slowly progressively getting worse. And, you know, I just remember thinking like, man, this isn't like, I went in to get my back checked out, like thinking maybe it'd be a nerve in my back that was somehow, you know, affecting my limbs or my feet and creating this tingliness. And obviously everyone else was perplexed, didn't know what was going on, and did tests and stuff and all that. And I just knew something was up. It wasn't normal, but it was one of those things. It wasn't like, here, look at my broken wrist or my whatever, you know. It was something that I was feeling and other people couldn't really see at that point yet, because I hadn't slowed down with my walking and whatnot. But it got to a point, you know, I want to say like 4 weeks or so later, we were at my grandparents' cottage in Ontario. And my family had flown out there to go there before we went over to England. And again, just slowly every day just began getting worse and worse. And I was getting really sluggish with my walking. And thankfully, you know, there was a town nearby there that had a neurologist who took me in and basically was, you know, willing to work with me and willing to trying to find out what was going on. And finally, you know, I went back to him one day and I was literally going like step for step walking. I just had my hand on a rail. There was no reflection at all with my knees when he did tests and stuff. It was crazy. And then he's like, okay, you got to go in the hospital. And I went in the hospital that day. Lady checked me out. She said, I think you might have Guillain-Barré syndrome. Obviously, I was like, what the heck is that? You know, and that affects like 1 in 1,000,000, I think it is. So I won the lottery in the wrong way. but you know what? I got a spinal tap and that confirmed it. And then right away I got treatment done, immunoglobulin treatment, I think it was what it was called. And that was crazy how I was better within, you know, very quick time, obviously. After getting that, but so thankful for people, you know, that go in and donate their blood and whatnot, because otherwise I wouldn't have had that treatment available to me. And so yeah, it was a trying time. Again, our place being affected, but like having a young child that you're looking after, and then going into the season being super excited, right, for a new year. And then having that happen and your health being really affected. Like, it was at the point where it was starting to creep its way up into my face. And my wife was talking to me and my mouth would be quivering. And I had no idea that was happening. Just, I was losing all sensation. It was crazy. So, but I'm really fortunate because there's people out there that are bedridden for long periods of time. And I'm just real fortunate that, you know, I'm okay nowadays too. Yeah, we're all lucky just to have our health.
Has it affected you in later life? Is there any after effect?
There is no physical after effect. Occasionally, like, with my nervous, peripheral nervous system, like, you know, if it's cold outside, maybe it's a little bit of tingling. And that's, I would only assume, like, some of my nerves maybe not fully healing. I think the one thing, you know, when I do, you know, in conversations like this, you come back to it and it's just like, again, it's just a reminder that, yeah, we're so grateful. We're so lucky just to have our health, you know, and when you don't have that, right. So it's given me appreciation and just, for the little things and just grateful. Yeah. For my health.
Adam Keith, the current Belfast Giants coach, wrote when you stepped away from the sport to recover from the illness, "Never nice to hear anyone battling an illness. Wishing Mike Egan of the Blaze a speedy recovery. Warrior on ice will battle back." Now, we all know what happened next, and this was the start of the sequel with you back in Blaze colours. How did the conversations happen with medical staff, family, to allow you to step back on the ice again?
Yeah, it was, I was, you know, for me, it was to come, you know, come back to playing. You know, if I could, I think it was important to have something to be focused on and to be, you know, to keep yourself busy and to allow yourself to get back even, you know, to normal life, which for me was playing hockey. And I think I was already had my mindset on playing, right? Obviously I had signed with them and I had been named captain of the team. So I was kind of set on that. And I didn't want to end that way either. If I couldn't, if I could end the, you know, on my own terms, and that's kind of what I would have liked to have done. But, you know, I obviously had to see the doctor a number of times here, and, you know, that was a number of years ago now. But, you know, sending off the medical forms and stuff that, you know, we had, that with the doctors and whatnot that I had seen here, so that, the staff in Coventry there were on the same page. But things happened quite quickly. I wanted to get back fast and get back to playing. And actually, there was an opportunity to go to Brayhead. And not very many people know about that. But it obviously didn't materialize. But I was hungry to get back. And I'm glad that, you know, Andy and the rest of the staff, Maddie, you know, were able to get me back and play with Coventry, which is where I wanted to go because I was comfortable there and I knew what it was like and I enjoyed being there. I would say, you know, for me, it was like, I see Coventry as like being more like a blue collar city, right? Like hardworking city. And that's kind of the way I see myself too.
When you did return, ironically enough, your first game was against Adam Keefe and the Giants. You mentioned earlier about like fight and the feeling of anxiousness when you're looking at stat packs with players who are paid to fight you night in, night out. What's going through your mind during the time when you're about to step back on the ice?
Yeah, well, it was crazy. It was, you know, like it's one of those things I think you kind of step away from after it's happened where you realize, man, that was like pretty cool, or that was crazy, you know, like kind of where you had come from. Like I said, like I was in a bed and I was getting a spinal tap and getting this blood work done and not being able to move, to relatively quick turnaround time to get back and be playing a competitive game. Was I at my best? When I look back now, no way. You know, like you're off for some time there and you're not exercising like you would. And then, you know, and I'm sure guys probably took it easy on me too, a little bit, knowing like what I had kind of gone through or knowing what the story was and whatnot. But so appreciative of the fans, so appreciative of, you know, them helping out. You know, we tried to raise a little bit of awareness with Guillain-Barré syndrome, and they did such a great job getting behind us and helping raise some money for that. And we had some big people in town there that really donated, you know, a good chunk of money and some prizes and stuff there. And just so grateful for them to do that. And, you know, teammates and whatnot too, that were willing to help out. And it was certainly an interesting year, but looking back, I was 100% playing those games. But for me though, I think what I was really fortunate with was being an athlete helped me get back faster, because as I said, you know, there's people that get it that are veteran for a long, long time, but being an athlete, I was really fortunate that I could kind of, you know, recover quickly.
Now you're back playing. There's a few coaching changes. Matty Sodstrom was replaced by Matt Lefebvre, who was then replaced by yourself and Steve Gertz on an interim basis. How was that period of coaching for you?
It was really weird. You know, like it would have been probably a better situation going in there not being teammates with your buddies, you know, like all of a sudden now you kind of got to, you know, in a sense, yeah, like act a little bit differently because you're helping coach a team, right? Like, and I had no experience. Like, I'm coaching now, right? I'm coaching now, and you know, I'm 5 years in, 6 years in, and I'm learning stuff all the time. But when you first start, you realize, holy smokes, like this coaching is not as easy as you thought it was as a player, right? And then you get put into those situations. Now you're helping coach. You're with your buddies that you all of a sudden, you know, potentially have to say something to. You know, learning the tactical side of the game, I realized how much of that I didn't know, you know, when I got into coaching. Like, so much of that goes into the game and the, you know, trying to solve puzzles here in the game, what's going on and whatnot. And so that was a, it was a weird experience, but it was a necessary experience, I think, for myself. And I think for the club too, to have, you know, someone go in there, get a different word in, allow them, also give them a little bit of time, maybe to search around and find someone, which obviously they did that third year, bringing Chuck in. And obviously we're grateful that they did that. But, you know, I think any situation you go into, I was willing to do it. And I was willing to, you know, I am willing to, from it, from all those situations, to try and learn from those things that you go through. And I, you know, I felt like I learned lots.
You've obviously just mentioned Chuck, and he came in, helped guide the Blaze to eighth, and on the path to the playoffs, and well, the playoff story itself, beating Nottingham in the quarterfinals, who we only mentioned earlier how Nottingham a couple of years previously stormed the league, lost less than 10 games in Unreal. Then the semi-finals, beating the Giants in after a penalty shootout with the ghost goal by Justin Da Costa. And then the final. What's going through your mind? Because 18 months previous, your career's on hold. 18 months forward, you were 60 minutes and a Sheffield Steelers team stopping you from being a playoff winner. What's happening with you?
Yeah, well, you're in a situation like that. I hadn't won anything prior, you know, in my career and whatnot. Like but we had that sense, we had that feeling that just like we're going to win it, right? You just have that feeling. You just know with that particular group and the way things are going that you're going to end up winning. And so for us, for me, knowing it was my last game too, just trying to soak a lot of it in. But that being said, like I've watched video of it, of the game and stuff. And there's a time there where we score a goal on with, I don't know what goal it was, maybe our fourth one, because we were doing well in that game, right? And then Sheffield and got a couple on us or whatever. And the fourth goal, I remember the team's jacked up and so excited on the bench. And I was just sitting there because I was like, you know, I want to stay focused. I don't want to get too excited here where we're like jumping around and being idiots and we lose focus, you know? So, but looking back at that, I probably could have had a little bit more fun, but I think it was just kind of my personality, you know, where it's just like, I'm dialed in and like, there's one thing I want to do and I want to find a way to win this. But like I said, we just, with that group, we just had that feeling, you know, like it was just, I have heard of that before with teams that have been successful. It just kind of, it's, yeah, they got a special group and we had a special group there and we were beating everyone, you know, for a long time there. Right. We started off the season, obviously really poor. And then we obviously got Chuck who came in and we were even losing a little bit too with them. With him, and then we bought into what he was preaching to us, and we started just rolling and steamrolling, and you know it's like a little ball of snow going down a hill, right? And then you just keep going, and it gets bigger and bigger, and before you know it, nobody's beating us, and what a feeling, you know, the best for, you know, I was just like your teammates that you're battling through. Every game that you're doing it for your mates, right? You're doing it for your buddies. So you guys can all experience that together. And then obviously for the fans, you know, Coventry been a little bit before, you know, since they had won some silverware with, in the IHL. So to give back to them too, you could feel just the passion that they had for the club. So that was just all around so much fun. And then obviously ending off for me selfishly as a player, ending off my career on a high note, you know, it was awesome. Yeah. I wish I had won more in my career. Maybe I should have been in the box all the time being selfish.
I was going to say, you mentioned going four up when Ashley Tay got the fourth goal. You got an assist on the opener, didn't you? You double yeah. click on that and Steve Gertsen got a tip on it. So I was watching the game and I was like, oh Aikman's got the opening goal. And then I was like, they announced it's Gertsen. Like, what game are they watching?
Yeah, we, it was, and a guy like Gertsy too, and Marzi was on the ice and, you know, right in front of net there too. And you can see, I think Tens was on that line as well. But like you can see when you watch that video, the replay of just how jacked up and excited we were, you know, and it brings it back to like when you're a kid, right? When you're excited and here we are, we're in our 30s playing a game and still finding a way to, you know, spark joy and whatnot. It was so much fun.
Obviously, you all know the fairy tale ending. Oh, I think all the lads in the room, we all cheered and celebrated that evening. There's two images of yourself or two photos that spring to mind with me. The first one, you're stood on the ice in Nottingham, fist clenched, emotion streaming off your face, looking into the crowd. What are you looking at or who are you looking at? Because that image there, the emotion you're showing, there's not a single weight on the world on your shoulders. You've got everything you ever need.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to explain it. You know, it was just like pure excitement, pure joy, and just looking at everybody up there, right? Like all those fans, like it was for them, you know, and just the ultimate letting loose and just pure joy, you know. And I think that was also many years of like, again, yeah, not being in that moment where you know, you're a young kid and you watch the Stanley Cup, you watch guys skating around, lifting the cup up. Did I get an opportunity to do that? Obviously not. So in my way, in a sense, like that was my Stanley Cup. That was my opportunity, like winning the cup and just being able to skate around and be like a kid and be hooting and hollering with your teammates and, you know, and having a few cold ones too. You know, we had a real good night, obviously.
Going on to that real good night, as you've just called it, the second image, you're about hanging out at the top of the team bus outside Crosby's with a playoff trophy.
Yeah.
Where's it coming from? Because that is an iconic image now.
Yeah, that you know, again, you know, a little bit silly, I think, you know, like how easy it could have, because obviously at that point, you know, we're on the bus coming back, again, having a few cold ones with your buddies, hooting and hollering, taking pictures and all that stuff. And then we, one thing just led to another and, you know, us kind of being kids, acting like kids a bit, but we wanted to bring that excitement to the fans, you know, and again, knowing, you know, it had been a long time for them, being able to experience that. And I think just in those moments, you know, you just, we need more moments like that, you know, like obviously right now with what we're going, the whole world's going through with COVID, you know, and all the negativity and stuff, like, just having that sort of, that community, you know, engagement, which was, I loved about it, you know, having everyone was a part of it. Not only was our team a huge, everybody in their own way brought something to the team, right? And it might have been, you know, being a really good face-off guy. It might have been a guy on the bench that was keeping the guys, you know, up and ready. It might have been a guy in the locker room keeping us light and having some fun and telling jokes. And then it was the fans. The fans are a big part of the team too. They're a part of our team, you know? Like you can feel that excitement when you're playing the game and you know, and just knowing that they stuck through with the club through thick and thin, and you know, they're a big part of they were a big part of our team too. So it was fun, so much fun celebrating with all of our fans.
As you just mentioned, like the fans, we feel these same emotions, but in a very different way. Like a late goal to put you in front, the crowd roar in the Sky Dome, it's in this league unbeatable on nights. Or yeah, a late penalty against us, which you've alluded on quite a bit about your penalty minutes, and the anxious breaths of, oh, great, on the PK with seconds to go, or hitting the pipe and 6 inches one way, you've won the game, 6 inches the other, and it's a glaring miss. But those two images, that just personifies the emotions of, well, yourself being a warrior and fighting back from adversity. And I think every fan that night was with you through every single emotion. But from that playoff year, obviously we all know it was a good ending for the Blaze. Have you got any stories you can share with us from that year?
Oh, stories from that year. I think just, you know, I think afterwards being in Crosby's there at the Sky Dome, you know, it was fun seeing Chuck kind of let loose. And I remember being up on the bar with him, with all the guys, and we were all singing. I can't remember what it was. I think it might've been We Are the Champions. And, you know, just again, culmination of a long year, like, you know, that transition, helping out with coaching. You know, I was doing my schooling that year. We had my wife and I, we've got the two young little ones, and they were real young then. And then the culmination of, the excitement of winning and whatnot. And then all of us just being able to let loose and really just taking it all in and seeing your coach there who, you know, his big thing coming in was just embrace the suck. And when it came in, it was like, we don't want to embrace this. But you know what? He got everyone on the same page. And I'm so grateful for Chuck too, you know, like for him coming in there and giving us an opportunity to have some success. And he was the leader. He was the leader, and he took, you know, maybe some upset vets that didn't really want to do that sort of stuff, but we got us all thinking and believing. And like I said, it took some time, but then over a bit of time, you know, we were just unbeatable. And it's because we had the strength of everybody. We had the whole team in there. It was every single member. So to see your coach up there, who was usually pretty serious, and just seeing him kind of just, you know, that for me was the culmination of the season, and you know, really enjoy that.
You've already touched on retirement, and you left the sport on a high for the playing side of the sport. Was retirement always on the agenda that summer, or had you had the conversations and the thoughts beforehand?
Yeah, it had already, you know, going into that year, it was at that point, you know, again, you know, I had injuries, you know, all my whole career. There was always the risk of getting another concussion. Like I had, you know, a few of those. That last year, I broke my hand badly, real bad. I had to have two surgeries on that. So that kind of just, you know, but before the season even started, you know, I knew that I wanted to go back play in Coventry, but I also wanted to end off my career with to get some schooling, you know. And I was lucky to obviously go to Coventry University there for that last year. So I wanted to do that. And then it was just, I didn't want to be going into like my mid 30s, you know, with a young family and not really have, you know, like solidified, I guess, my career away from the game. Like it got to that point where I was like, you know what, I'm thankful, I'm grateful, I've got lots from the game, and I think it's time to kind of just to move on. But man, you miss the jokes and going to the rink each day and hearing stories you know, having a good laugh and whatnot. And then, yeah, I certainly miss that. I don't miss the rough stuff anymore, you know, that, but I miss just hanging out with your buddies and doing that stuff, you know. But now I'm involved in hockey now still, right? I'm a coach, and so I get to see it. I get to be involved in a different way, and I try and give back to the kids as much as I can. And, you know, where I work, We've got all former hockey players, both female and male, and we all kind of, we kind of all have that mindset, like a locker room kind of. Obviously, we're smart about what we say and whatnot, but we enjoy going to the office every day and kind of keeping things light and being able to still be involved in hockey. Really grateful.
So, Mike, we're just coming towards the end of it for you now. Obviously, you've touched briefly upon it there with the kind of captain hockey with the coaching of the kids. What else does Mike Egner get up to in his time nowadays?
Well, I spend a lot of time with my kids, my wife. She's really busy. She's involved in group fitness, spin class type things, yoga. She's really involved with that. And then my kids, Mika and Freddie. Mika's 8 now and Freddie's 6, turning 7 next month. So, you know, we've got them involved in a lot of activities. They're both playing soccer or football. I'm helping coach Freddie with baseball. He does that a couple of times. My daughter, she does dance, and then they do some can skate, which is like skating right now, just to help with their skating and whatnot. They play hockey in the winter. So my activities with them are keep me busy enough. And then, with coaching and coaching the group that I coach, the coach the U15 group here in Penticton, BC, the Okanagan Hockey Group. That takes a lot of energy. Yeah. Right. You want to bring it every day for them and make sure that you're giving your best to them, but they have full days. So we're chaperoning them around, doing the different exercises and whatnot they're doing. So when I come home, do the activities with the kids. And then by the time the night's done, you know, you're toast. You're a little bit tired, but when things are normal, when we don't have COVID, try and see my family as much as we can. My wife's family, they come visit us here. My parents have a place out in the cusp, BC. They've got a place on the water. So we try and visit them. And then I got a little bit of a nerdy side to me too. I really like, I'm really into like art and stuff. So, you know, when I can, I enjoy doing that sort of stuff. That's kind of me in a nutshell.
It's good to hear, Mike. Good to hear you're having a good time there. So what we do now is obviously, excuse me, we do a little bit of a round robin just to make sure the guys haven't had any questions that have maybe cropped up while you've been discussing things. So we'll start with Ross, because you've been quite quiet for a bit, mate. And I think you've got a bit lonely there. So Ross, anything from yourself?
No, just want to say, listening to what you went through with your illness and getting back onto the ice, you know, absolutely incredible journey, and becoming a playoff champion, it's all the most you deserve. So I just really want to say fantastic and brilliant, fair play to you.
Oh, thanks, Ross. I appreciate that.
And Scott, have you got any more that you'd like to add?
Yeah, my friend Rob Plaister, you know quite well, Mike. He took a picture of you and Ryan O'Mara in the centre ice at the Sky Dome after the playoff win. Was that a bit of closure for you? And what was going through your mind at that point?
Yeah, that was crazy. Him capturing a moment like that was pretty neat. Marzi and I, we've talked about that a bunch of times, right? It was just, obviously, his career was coming to a close, and he knew that he was moving on. The friendships that you have, you build. You know, Marzi, I played with him for a year, and then a guy like Rob, you know, that I got to really get to know and become friends with. That's what hockey's all about. And he just kind of, he was able to capture a cool moment between Marzi and I, just kind of reminiscing and just being, you know, we were just like, being in the middle of the rink like that, the light shut off after you won a championship, you know, just reminiscing and, you know, how the season went. Again, I think we had a beer. We each having a beer, a cold one. And just, that's the type of guy that Robbie is, right? go and, you know, just kind of sticking around a little bit longer so that he could kind of capture that special moment between Marzi and I and whatnot. It was, that whole night was just, it was fun. It was even fun, you know, with us coming in there and we all were able to talk to the fans and kind of go through and everyone kind of say their thing. And then, yeah, it led over into obviously Crosby's afterwards and some good fun. But yeah, that was a cool moment. I have that picture here.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
And finally, Ash, have we got any more from yourself?
Yeah, probably a tough question to be fair. You've mentioned a lot of players who you've played alongside over your career. Ryan Getzlaff, for example, Ryan O'Mara. Looking back over your career, do you look at someone and go, geez, that guy is next level? Or would you have a top line you played with? Or is it just you're happy to be playing the sport?
Yeah. You know, we certainly played with some good players and whatnot. I think it kind of, you know, there was a lot of really talented guys that you play with. A lot of talented guys too, like even down in the ECHL that you play with and you're like, man, like this guy shouldn't be here, you know, and a lot of times it's just luck, right? A lot of it being the right situation, right spot to be given a good opportunity to go on and play somewhere. But, you know, one of the guys I can think of down in the ECHL was Mitch Fadden. Mitch Fadden, you know, unfortunately he passed away, but he was a really good hockey player. And he was one of those guys you're just like, man, like this guy's got no business being down here. Like he is next level. And, you know, of course, guys that you play with in the American League, I play with Kerry Rammo. You remember him, a goalie? Played with the Flames, Finnish goaltender. He was really good. And I remember, yeah, playing with him and just being like, this guy's top level, right? But then also I think you play with some guys too that you're, or like know some guys that play in the show and you're like, you know, I don't know if that guy really, but again, it's like you're kind of in the right spot, the right time, or you get in with the organization where they have some people there that need that type of player, or they, you know, a lot, like I said, a lot of it's luck. So, but, and then, you know what, there's some kids now I'm coaching. Oh my goodness. It's insane what these kids can do nowadays at their age, you know, and I'm so impressed. Like there's days almost every day in practice, I just like blown away by what these kids can do at this level and at this age. It's so much, so far advanced. And that's the cool thing. You know, you take away a lot of the fighting and the silly stuff. I know fans love like that, right? But when you see the stuff that these kids are doing, how skilled the NHL is nowadays, like that brings you out of your seat too. And so I think, now without as much fighting, you're seeing kids come up who are not as scared to be doing things on the ice. They're not necessarily worried about someone trying to take their head off, right? They're all, I think coaches too are a lot more receptive to kids doing unique, different things and creative things on the ice too. So they know they can try those things. But yeah, there's some young kids I coach now that just are so talented. It's so neat to see. So I saw lots of good players, obviously playing lots of good players now as a coach. So it's neat to see on both sides. Obviously in junior, you touched on before, Getzlaff was the best player I played with. Like just, he could just see the ice so well. He had his athleticism, but his ability to read the play and be able to make plays other guys couldn't do. Like it was natural, right?
It's fantastic to hear. Obviously, all the players you mentioned there, Mike, and obviously the passion you've just mentioned there with the junior system and what you've been doing. Do you see yourself continuing with junior coaching, or would you look to maybe take the step up and work your way into a major coaching role, maybe in East Coast, AHL, or would you think, nah, it's not really my cup of tea at the moment?
Yeah, I don't think it's really for me at the moment, to be honest. I think the stage in my life with, you know, the kids at the age that they're at. I think that, you know, could maybe see if I was going to pursue it further, major junior, working with like that age group.
Yeah.
You know, I really enjoy the age group I work with now, because I feel like you can be so impressionable on them. You know, you can be a role model for them. And so you can just, I enjoy being able to make a big impact on people, or try to as best I can. Yeah. And so I've been enjoying working with the age I'm at right now currently. But you know what, who knows? You never know what could come out of it. But so thankful, right? Being able to still be involved in the game.
Good to hear. At least you've got your opportunity there if you do want to. So
yeah,
I think that's it pretty much, Mike, that we've all got here. I think the lads have all kind of finalised what they've got. So the only thing I can really say now is thank you for taking your time out of your day to join us for the last hour or so speaking. And anybody who is listening to the episode when this is out, thank you for listening to the episode and continuing with us. I know we've had a bit of a break, but we're back. We are going to try and get the episode out as normal. So thank you, everybody, and enjoy the rest of the week. Thanks again for listening to the Third Period of Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to check out Willie's Ice Hockey Emporium for all your ice hockey needs.